Okay, let's unpack this. If you're tracking the high-end Android market, you know that chip architecture. Well, it determines
It
everything.
really does.
But lately, Qualcomm has introduced some serious confusion with their top-tier mobile processors. We're diving into the Snapdragon 8 Gen 5, and this chip, it's positioned as the true standard successor to 2023's 8 Gen 3, not that ultra premium elite model that launched earlier.
And that distinction, standard versus elite, that's absolutely the crux of this deep dive. Because, traditionally, the standard chip is just a small step up, maybe a slightly polished version of what came before.
Right.
But the 8 Gen 5 is an enormous generational leap. It feels like it was designed specifically to bring near elite performance to a much more affordable flagship tier.
And here's the surprise nugget that makes this whole story so much more interesting than just a spec bump. The biggest news isn't really the silicon itself.
No.
It's the phone launching it, the OnePlus 15R, and the surprising depth of co-development that OnePlus had with Qualcomm.
They didn't just buy the chip, they helped build it.
Exactly.
That's right. The whole traditional product launch cycle is getting completely shaken up. So today we're going to look at where the 8 Gen 5 fits in the flagship landscape, what crucial performance numbers Qualcomm is highlighting, and critically, what high-end features survive that move from the elite tier down to this standard flagship category.
We are essentially analyzing a lesson in strategic trade-offs. We're seeing what Qualcomm decided you need in a modern flagship versus what you can live without to save a few hundred dollars. And I think the conclusion might surprise you. So let's start with that initial shockwave, the co-development story. When we first heard OnePlus confirm they played a major role in co-developing the Snapdragon 8 Gen 5, I initially thought, okay, they gave some software feedback, but it goes much, much deeper than that, doesn't it?
It really does. It signals a fundamental shift in how the industry operates at, the highest levels. According to OnePlus, they went to Qualcomm shortly after the launch of the Snapdragon 8 Gen 3 to work together on the follow-up.
Wow, that early.
Yeah. And this wasn't just some casual conversation. They formalized the specifications and the scope of work way back in December of last year.
And that led directly to this launch.
Right.
They cited 24 months of work spent specifically tuning this new chip.
24 months.
That is a massive investment of time and resources for a handset manufacturer.
It is.
It suggests they were influencing foundational design choices, not just, optimizing the OS on top of a finished product.
Exactly. When a manufacturer commits that kind of time, they aren't just adjusting color profiles. They're telling Qualcomm, look, we need this chip to thermally perform in this way when playing this specific game.
Or we need the ISP to handle this complex HDR merge in this exact time frame.
Precisely.
And they had seven stated key areas of focus. Performance, gaming, imaging, AI, display, connectivity, and network. Can we kind of connect the dots on how a phone maker might influence those?
I think we can. Let's take gaming and performance. OnePlus is known for its aggressive charging and high sustained performance.
Sure.
Their feedback likely influenced the exact clock speed envelope we see in this chip. Maybe they pushed for slightly lower peak clocks compared to the Elite, knowing that those lower clocks translate to much better sustained thermal performance over, say, a 45-minute gaming session.
Which is a huge consumer benefit. I mean, nobody wants a phone that hits some crazy peak score for 2 seconds and then thermal throttles and becomes sluggish.
No.
Sustained performance is the real measure of quality.
Precisely. And in imaging and AI,
Sure.
their influence is likely why the camera features are so robust in this standard variant. They knew that customers buying this, say, $800 phone still demand flagship-level photo capabilities, even if they don't need the absolute bleeding-edge GPU power.
So the partnership made sure those critical features survived the jump down to the value chip.
I think so.
And this whole collaboration culminated in the announcement that the OnePlus 15R, which is the international version of the Chinese OnePlus Ace 6T, that phone will be the global first launch partner.
Yes, the 15R will be the very first smartphone to officially rock this non-elite variant. And that makes perfect sense, because this positions the 15R as the ultimate value flagship device. We're expecting to see it in North America around December.
The entire point of the 8 Gen 5 is to enable that category.
It is. Now, before we get into the internal blueprint, we have to tackle the confusion, because Qualcomm's branding strategy is making my head spin a little. Why is a standard Gen 5 coming out after an elite Gen 5?
Yeah, it probably makes sense to the product managers, but for the average user, it is baffling. It kind of implies the 8 Gen 5 is replacing the Elite, but it's not.
It's not. What's fascinating here is that the 8 Gen 5 is the actual annual next-generation base variant. It sits above the ES tier. The Elite version is a premium SKU. It's intended for a smaller market segment.
Okay.
So Qualcomm is deliberately framing the 8 Gen 5's performance against the older 8 Gen 3, the 2023 flagship, to show you, the consumer, this is the natural, massive, yearly upgrade path.
So if you bought a flagship phone in 2024 with the 8 Gen 3, this 8 Gen 5 is what you look at in 2026. This isn't just a mid-cycle refresh.
Absolutely not. And despite being the more affordable option, the 8 Gen 5 is built on the same cutting-edge foundation as the Elite version. And that's what's really important here.
Okay, tell us about that foundation. What did they keep from the absolute top-tier tech?
They kept the manufacturing process. It's built on TSMC's 3-nanometer process node,
which is key for efficiency.
Essential for power efficiency.
Yeah.
And crucially, it features the custom-built Qualcomm Oryon CPU. This Oryon CPU, it shares architectural roots with the third-gen Oryon CPU that's in the 8 Elite Gen 5.
Okay.
And it includes that necessary hardware matrix acceleration for improved AI performance.
So they're starting with the highest quality, most advanced silicon foundation. If the base is the same, where does the compromise happen that makes it non-elite? Is it fewer cores?
No, and this is really good news for consumers. The core layout is the same. 2 powerful prime cores and 6 performance cores.
So they didn't disable
anything. They didn't disable anything. The compromise is purely in the clock speed.
The ceiling.
The ceiling, precisely. The 8 Gen 5 peaks at 3.8 gigahertz and 3.32 gigahertz. Now, compare that to the Elite's truly aggressive peak speeds of 4.6 gigahertz and 3.62.
Those are significant differences.
Huge.
So if I understand the business model correctly, these are likely chips that came off the 3-nanometer wafer that just couldn't hit those extreme clock speeds consistently enough to be branded elite. So by capping the speeds slightly lower, Qualcomm can sell them at a lower cost, and they generate less heat.
It's a win-win.
It's a win-win for the value segment.
Exactly. You're getting, what, 90% of the maximum potential speed, but with massively reduced thermal output and cost.
Yeah.
Which, as we discussed with that OnePlus collaboration, is crucial for sustained real-world performance in a mainstream flagship device.
All right, let's get into the hard numbers. When we compare this new 8 Gen 5 against the older 8 Gen 3, which is the comparison Qualcomm wants us to focus on, the generational leap is substantial, especially in efficiency.
It is truly enormous. We are looking at gains that move beyond mere bragging rights and into features you actually notice every single day. Mm-hmm. The CPU performance jumps by 36% compared to the 8 Gen 3. That's fast.
That's very fast.
But the efficiency is a real story here. 42% better CPU efficiency.
Wow. A 42% jump in efficiency. That's why we're talking about real battery life benefits, not just faster loading screens.
Correct. The battery is the same size, but the chip is just using power far more intelligently. Then you look at the NPU, the neural processing unit for AI workloads. It sees a 46% speed increase compared to the 8 Gen 3 while maintaining the same efficiency.
And this is vital right now because every major tech company is trying to run their large language model, think Gemini or other assistants locally, on the device. What makes the 8 Gen 5 good at that?
It's the support for IMT2 precision.
Okay, simplify that for us.
To simplify that concept, when you run a big AI model locally, you have to compress it or quantize it so it fits on the chip's memory. IMT2 precision is a technical way of saying the chip can handle extreme quantization. It means the chip can run models that are twice as big or twice as complex on the same amount of memory compared to older architectures.
It just opens the door for much more sophisticated on-device AI features.
It does.
That makes perfect sense. So core performance is fantastic. Now, here's where we need to look at the strategic cuts. And that starts with the graphics department. This is where it gets really interesting.
It does. The GPU, the Adreno unit, uses the latest sliced architecture. It supports modern features like ray tracing and mesh shading. But this is the clearest point of differentiation from the Elite chip. It is a cut-down version.
How significant of a cut are we talking?
The 8 Gen 5 GPU has only 2 slices compared to the Elite Line's 3 slices.
2 versus 3.
Right. Think of those slices like extra processing lanes on a highway. The Elite chip has 3 lanes, so it can handle maximum traffic much faster. The 8 Gen 5 has 2, which is still fantastic, but it will bottleneck at the highest demand.
And what about the memory they removed? I saw it lacks the HBM.
It also lacks the Adreno high-performance memory, or HPM, that the 8 Elite Gen 5 includes. HPM is essentially high-speed dedicated memory right next to the GPU. It allows the Elite chip to handle intense data spikes like sudden explosions or detailed texture loading in a game instantly.
So the loss of HPM in a slice What does that mean for the average user?
For a casual user or someone who plays standard mobile games, probably nothing.
Okay.
For the hardcore, demanding mobile gamer, it means slightly slower load times, or maybe the inability to run the absolute maximum graphics settings in the most demanding titles. The performance drop versus the Elite is about 20% in GPU benchmarks. But critically, against the older 8 Gen 3, it's still 11% better performance overall.
It's an easy cut to justify for the price reduction.
A very easy cut.
And the final, most visible cut is the video capture capability.
Yes. The major downgrade is the loss of 8K video recording. This suggests that 8K video is now strictly an Elite-only premium feature for Qualcomm.
Okay.
The 8 Gen 5 is still incredibly capable. It supports 4K at 120 frames per second for slow motion, and it can play back 8K HDR content.
That you just can't record it.
You can't record it.
And honestly, how many users were actually using 8K video capture on their phones? That feature is a massive battery and storage hog. It
really is.
This feels like removing a feature most people didn't use to enable a massive price cut.
It's the definition of a smart compromise. What's fascinating to me is how much true flagship functionality they kept, despite those cuts. If you're a photography enthusiast or someone who relies on voice assistants, the experience here is still top tier.
Let's look at the AI sensing hub. This is where AI moves beyond just processing large models and starts interacting with the physical world.
Precisely. The sensing hub has its own dedicated low-power AI processor. And that allows the chip to be always listening, not just for keywords, but for user intent.
What does that mean, user intent?
For example, it combines motion, microphone, and sensor inputs to detect if you're about to speak, simply when you pick up the device, or if you've raised it to your ear.
So it preemptively wakes up Gemini or another assistant before you even say the wake word. It's contextual awareness at the hardware level. That is an absolute flagship feature.
It is. And the camera capabilities are virtually identical to the Elite version, which provides huge value. We're talking about a 20-bit Triple AI ISP, or image signal processor.
20-bit.
That 20-bit depth delivers a four-fold increase in dynamic range compared to older chips.
Four-fold dynamic range. What does that mean for me when I take a photo on vacation?
It means much better photos in challenging light. If you take a picture of a friend standing in shadow with a bright background, that 20-bit ISP can capture detail in both the very dark areas and the very bright areas simultaneously.
Without washing out the sky or...
Or completely blacking out your friend. This isn't just better photos. This is truly bringing last year's, say, $1,200 camera algorithms to a potential $799 phone.
And the hardware support is there for these massive camera systems we're seeing?
Yes. It supports the huge configurations OEMs love. 48MP plus 48MP plus 48MP triple cameras with zero shutter lag or ZSL.
So the camera takes the picture instantly, no lag.
Instantly. Even while complex image processing is happening, it also supports a 108MP single camera with ZSL and crazy 320MP snapshot support.
And they threw in the audio enhancements too, like Snapdragon Audio Sense.
Which is fantastic. That's the tech that enables features like audio zoom when you're recording video.
And wind noise reduction.
And dramatic wind noise reduction. And finally, you keep the Night Vision 3.0 video capture, which gives you clear low-light videos without massive grain.
So on the connectivity front, we're still looking at a really robust package, even if they didn't use the absolute newest modem, correct?
Correct. They're using the Snapdragon X80 modem, which is the same one found in the original 8 Elite.
Mm. So one generation behind the latest X85.
Exactly. But we are still talking serious real-world speeds, up to 10 gigabits per second peak download and 3.5 gigabits upload.
That's future-proofing, even if it's not the bleeding edge.
It absolutely is.
And for wireless standards.
You get Wi-Fi 7, Bluetooth 6.0 X-band for Wi-Fi audio, which gives you lower latency for high-fidelity streaming to earbuds. It also supports integrated UWB, or ultra-wideband, for precise device tracking, assuming the OEMs use the FastConnect 7900 chip.
Right.
And, of course, Quick Charge 5 support. For 99% of consumers, this is completely indistinguishable from the most premium connectivity available today.
So let's synthesize all of this. What does it all mean for the consumer market? If we step back and look at the whole package, the 8 Gen 5 feels like an incredible value proposition.
It is the ultimate value chip. The 8 Gen 5 delivers CPU and NPU performance that is nearly on par with the flagship 8 Elite of last year, maybe 95% of the power, but with compromises limited only to the extreme high end of GPU performance and 8K video.
Things that, frankly, often go unused by average buyers anyway.
Exactly.
And because of these strategic compromises, Qualcomm can aim this chip squarely at that more affordable flagship segment. Sources are expecting to see this chip in handsets priced around the $799 entry-level price point, maybe even lower.
That's providing serious value for consumers in the coming cycle. And market adoption is already strong. We mentioned OnePlus, but other global brands confirmed to be working on devices with this chipset include IQOO, Vivo, and Motorola.
So this chip is going to be widespread. It's going to power the best deals in mobile tech in the next year.
I think so.
And it all circles back to the OnePlus 15R. That phone is positioned as the ultimate value flagship device. It's following up on the OnePlus 13R, which retailed for, what, $600?
Around there, yes.
The 15R promises to bring that huge generational speed leap and that incredible camera tech into a much more palatable price bracket, all thanks to that deep co-development work they did.
We'll get more details on the 15R release on December 17th.
I'm looking forward to that.
Ultimately, the 8 Gen 5 successfully blurs the line between high-end and ultra-premium. It kept the key features, strong AI, camera, core CPU capabilities, while making those highly strategic cuts on the GPU and 8K video to hit that lower price.
This raises an important question then. Given the performance metrics we've discussed, especially that very small difference in CPU and AI performance compared to the elite chips, will the rise of the value flagship ultimately make the ultra-premium elite chips feel like overkill? I mean, for almost every user outside of the most extreme mobile gamers, what stands out to you as the biggest reason left to still spring for the elite model?